Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
BT is now back on the Fan, down with the King topic of the day, and it's been Aaron Glenn, BT. He's in the building, and the reports are that the Jets don't want to let him leave, so the idea of potentially hiring their new head coach and new GM as soon as today, we'll find out. We'll be on the air for the next couple hours, so if the news breaks, we'll have it for you here. If not, Evan and Tiki got you covered, but I expect it to happen. It's felt like that way for a while, that the Jets were leaning toward Aaron Glenn. And look, we've talked about a lot of it. In case you missed it, check out on the free Odyssey app. I am open to the idea of believing he can eventually have some success, especially with the right staff around him. But I would not have made that hire. Not this time. Not another first-time head coach who's more of a defensive, or comes from being a defensive coordinator. You could say he's a head coach all he wants. He was a defensive coordinator, and he's a first-time head coach, not with the other candidates that were available, and not after all the losing and failures the Jets have had with that same type of hire.
The Jets have been so inept that no matter what they do, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. I think the only hire that would have been pretty much beyond reproach, and this is not why he was number one for me, but I think universally would have been completely embraced, was Vrabel. Once that ship sailed and we ran through all the other possibilities, I'm going to put Aaron aside for a sec because you know I'm fully behind Aaron Glenn become the coach of the Jets. But if it's McCarthy, or if it was McCarthy, then you get into, well, he wants Rodgers. Then I think a large faction of Jet fans would not want Rodgers to return, so that would be less than perfect. If it's Ben Johnson, all right, he's done nothing in terms of actually winning a game as a head coach. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he doesn't have a young quarterback to groom. So is that a really good fit? Basically what Dable's going through with the Giants right now, okay? So I think Ben Johnson, although it would have been intriguing, I think that would have been met with a great deal of skepticism as well. I think that when you lift up the curtain or lift up the hood of Aaron Glenn, he checks the parts that I think for me are non-negotiable. The other stuff, I don't know. I don't know how his mind is going to respond in the fourth quarter up in Buffalo in the new stadium in a couple of years, and it's just ridiculously loud, and he can't even hear himself think, and he's got to call a timeout, or he's got to do this, and he's got to confer with the coordinator. Is he stable? Which I think he will, but until he does it, I don't know that stuff. But I do strongly believe that if it's Aaron, the moment he walks into the building, he will command respect, he will give respect, and if his respect is not met with the respect or the emotion that he demands, you will be out of that building, and that's how you have to start changing culture.
Yeah, I think to me there's some truth to what you just said. I also think there's a difference between a bad hire and a, I don't know if I want to say risky hire.
Uninspiring hire?
No, not even that. Like, Glenn to me is not a bad hire.
Mm-hmm.
Rex Ryan would have been a bad hire in my mind. So Aaron Glenn isn't that, but I just value the things that you wanted to check the box on that you said are non-negotiable was, for me, experience and or offensive mind. So he doesn't check either of those boxes. Again, it doesn't mean that he can't be successful, but with the other options available, that's where I would have gone. And I'm trying to limit the question marks here, especially with this organization. And I think there are plenty of question marks when you have a first-time head coach, specifically when he is of the defensive guy. Now, if you loved Vrabel, and you did, I did not, I would have been open to him, but I didn't love Vrabel. Mm. The only thing that he would have checked in my particular box would have been experience. And it wasn't even great at that. Like, if I'm going to go experience, then Mike McCarthy's had better, more success than Vrabel. So if I'm valuing, or Pete Carroll. So if I'm valuing just experience, then I would go maybe more so those guys. Vrabel was not an offensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
His teams were not good offensive teams. They ran the football, and they had Derrick Henry. In doing so, they had Ryan Tannehill.
Well, just real quick. I mean, they had a couple years where they were good offensively. They just weren't conventionally good in terms of airing it out. But they had, like, one year, I think they were fourth in offense. One of those years with Tannehill, and obviously Derrick Henry.
Right, so when I say they weren't good, meaning that once they got into the postseason, like, it could only go so far. There was a cap on the way that they were trying to win. Now, that could have been circumstance, quarterback, whatever, circumstantial.
Okay.
But at least if you're in the boat of, okay, well, you wanted Vrabel. You, BT, wanted him more because he was
leader of men.
Yeah, leader of men, no nonsense, coming into the room, changing the room. Well, Glenn.
But also won.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
understood.
Where
well,
you,
that's the difference.
I think you underrate what he did.
Well, I mean, he won to what extent? But that's why
11 games with Tannehill, a couple times, 10 games.
That's why
playoff games.
Yeah,
he
also lost toward the end of it. But the point is, he was more so than Glenn because at least he had the experience. But still, if you're okay with Vrabel, then I think you should be, and a lot of Jet fans were, then I think you should still be okay with Glenn because the only thing that he doesn't seemingly have that Vrabel did was the experience.
Mm-hmm.
He's got seemingly the leader of men thing going for him, the attitude, all that stuff, and he's still a defensive guy. So it's not like you're losing some brilliant offensive mind in Vrabel versus Aaron Glenn. I was not all in on Vrabel, which is why I'm certainly not all in on Glenn, who's even less than Vrabel because he doesn't have the experience.
Let me ask you this, because we don't really get into this too much, and I'm not sure that we should overstate what it means, but I don't know that we've even really got into it enough. I want to flush through it real quick. So, is it your opinion that if you're the DC of, say, the Steelers or the Niners or the Ravens, we know the teams that have a good culture, they win consistently, right? At this point, the Buffalo Bills. Don't you think if you're the DC for a lackluster losing franchise like Detroit has always been,
right,
and you're part of that ascent, you're part of that renaissance, should that have more impact than being a DC on a team like the Ravens, who always win 10-11 games?
Yeah, because you want to come from the bottom and experience that. I also think learning from what made Dan Campbell so successful. When Dan Campbell took over, everybody was saying the same thing about the Lions as they were about the Jets. All laughingstock, this guy's talking about biting people's kneecaps off. What the hell is this? And they were patient, and it took some time, but he built it up. And he may have been a coach you want to go play for, but people were mocking that at the time. So, to see that through and now know what it takes to be successful, and I'm sure Glenn saw that in Dan Campbell along the way. Hey, this is how he operates, no nonsense, and maybe his way behind the scenes that we're seeing. Yeah, I'm sure that there's great value in learning that as opposed, I see what you're saying, just being put in a spot where they're always successful and not knowing to come from the abyss.
Yeah, and again, listen, I know that we oversimplify this stuff sometimes just to get to other points, but you tell me what's a tougher job in terms of having the same success statistically, being the batting coach, or the hitting coach, or the Yankees, or the Pirates.
Right.
I mean, last year you roll out Judge and Soto and some other good sticks, and historically they always have studs versus a Pirates team that has, maybe two above average major league bats and a bunch of guys making minimum wage. What's the more impressive accomplishment? If the stats are similar, I would say it's the Pirates job or the Reds or any other team you want to throw into that category. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and kind of the play to your point, I don't believe this was a hire because of the results of the Lions defense, because I was reading, I think it was our buddy Connor Green, who works here behind the scenes, big Jet fan, was tweeting something out saying that Glenn has only had one top 10 defense or something like that as his time as a defensive coach, which shows you that it's not just about the results of the defense, which I like. And this year, forget about it with Detroit, they're ravaged or whatever. I wouldn't go off of that, though, in general. You're not hiring him because of the numbers that he put up statistically with said defense in another town with another team.
Yeah.
You're hiring him because you believe he could be a true head coach.
I do. Right. Yeah, but I also, listen, you probably know what word I'm going to reach for. What's the word? Begins with the letter A. Adaptability.
Yeah. I wouldn't have gotten that word.
That's why I spared everybody the time. We were kind of going to play the guessing game here. But, like, if you go to whether it's ESPN.com, I actually want you guys to do the CBSSports.com, NFL.com. Go to depth chart for the Detroit Lions. Got 12, 13 guys on IR, on defense.
All right.
So, they might not have been rated in the top 10, but this vaunted, renaissance of Sam Darnold and the brilliant O'Connell, the offensive mind, Aaron Glenn's defense abused them. Now, they got abused this past week All right? They gave up a lot of points to the Commanders, but the previous week, they shut down an offense that was really, really good. And, you know, I just think that it's not like he's trying out Lawrence Taylor and Carl Banks and Harry Carson and
defense,
Gary Reasons every week.
Stunk this year.
What's that?
Their defense is the Lions' defense has stunk this year. You could say it's because of injury or whatever, but it's stunk this year.
Did it stink against the Vikings in a playoff game?
Well, no, but they had
it was phenomenal. They absolutely destroyed Sam Darnold in that offense.
Well, Sam Darnold also, I don't think is very good. I know he had a good year, but
All year, everybody was raving about the O'Connell Sam Darnold connection. We can't just conveniently say now, well, it wasn't really that good. And I agree. I do think that it was elevated a little bit more maybe than it should have been. But we got to be consistent. If we were,
we are. You reacted more positively to that performance than I did. I didn't really care about it. Like, as far as Glenn goes, that performance against the Vikings did nothing for me.
Why?
Because it didn't mean it was one singular game. And by the way, it was followed up with Sam Darnold laying another egg against the Rams the next night. And also look at what the Lions defense has done. The Lions defense, midway through the year since they lost all those guys, has been a disaster. It's been a train wreck. They're winning games because they're scoring 45, 50 points.
No question. No question.
I'm not knocking Glenn, but as a matter of fact, BT, I'm saying it's a better thing that the Jets are hiring him not because of the defense's numbers that they put up in his time there.
Listen, I get that. And, you know, I don't want to just, lean on stats, although they do tell a little story. But, you know, just looking at some of these scores. Yeah, the offense scored a lot, but a Dallas win, that was middle of October, 47-9. The Jaguars, middle of November, 52-6. The Colts on the road, 24-6. The Bears, 34-17. The Vikings at Sunday night, 31-9. Like, it's not like they're winning 45-40. It's not like the old Dolphin Jet games in the mid-80s with O'Brien and Dan Marino where nobody can stop anybody. And again, I know that the stats aren't amazing, but they were not giving up as many points as maybe. So that's why I use the word adaptability, at least just to put something out there that is representative of a functional defense with second and third stringers, to me, is very impressive.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Scott is in Ridgewood, New Jersey. What's up, Scott?
Hey, guys. Listen, great show. Everything you're saying for the past half hour, spot on. Really spoken like guys who know what's going on. And just to reiterate, and I'm not going to yell and scream, even though I want to, we cannot go down the road of another rookie head coach. We have got to do something that we've only seen twice in my entire fandom since 1979, and that is bring in an experienced head coach that immediately commands the respect of the players. Now, if you look at this team, they don't tackle. They don't work hard. They take plays off. You can see when they're mailing it in 5 minutes into a game. We never close a game out in the fourth quarter. What we lack, and the reason we have no success, is because we keep having rookie head coaches and entitled players who take advantage of them, and this is the perfect time to bring in an experienced head coach. Listen, you could run it back easily with Devontae and Aaron Rodgers and all the weapons that we have, all the talent that we have that was mismanaged this past season. Go get Mike McCarthy. Every year we pass on a guy like him.
Scott, right? Can I ask you a question, Scott? And I jump in because I'm not even saying that I disagree, but they're not even going to have a conversation with McCarthy, so that's not going to happen. So let's deal in reality. So, and now we know the recent list of head coaches with no experience, they bombed, but How old are you? You'll see where I'm going. How old are you, Scotty?
I'm 60.
Okay. So forget about before my time. I mean, would you say that Rex is one of the more successful head coaches in Jets history? Would you say that?
No, absolutely not.
You'd be wrong.
You know, if you look past those first two years, no. Even though would you say Mark Sanchez is one of the best quarterbacks the Jets ever had? Because that's the same argument with Rex Ryan with those 2 years.
Well,
those
but not exactly. That's not 100% true.
Hold on, Scott. And it was a train wreck.
Yeah, I don't understand. But okay. All right. Well, listen, I don't want to get too down the rabbit hole. The point is.
Hold on, Scott.
There's a point here. The point is that most of the success that the Jets have had, and it's been pretty scarce, I'll give you that, came when guys were rookie head coaches. Did Herm coach before he got here?
Yes, he did, but if I could just answer.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Top Sirloin Steak, $4.99 per pound. Mix and match 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Exclusive digital deal of the week. Lucerne shredded, sliced, or chunk cheese, 6.84 to 8 ounce varieties, $1.97 each. Limit 4 items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Parcells came in and changed the culture and loaded us with talent. And after him, we had a really nice 8-year run where we were always in the conversation for the playoffs. I get that, and I agree with you completely, but I think times have changed and players have changed. Back then, you had no social media. Back then, these guys were not individual brands. Back then, you didn't have the type of free agency where players could just walk into someone's office or have an agent call a GM and say, I don't want to be here anymore, which Garrett Wilson could do tomorrow. Yep. And all of a sudden, he'll be an Atlanta Falcon. So I think you really need to look at what's going on now. Sean Payton was sitting there, and we didn't take him. And we're going to do it again with a win-now team. Now, I grant you that when we went after Adam Gase, that was a bad mistake, but it wasn't because of the philosophy. The philosophy of going after an experienced head coach, someone who had, you know, an understanding of offense. We just picked the wrong guy, okay? And you could see it from his first press conference. Right. I don't even need to go down that road. It doesn't mean you can't try it again. And but yes, you're right.
But it also
we're
doesn't
not
mean
go after McCarthy. But
and Scott, I'm agreeing with
good
you.
Call,
and thank
Scott.
You for the call. Yes, very good, good call. Good passion, good information, and knowledge as well. I'm agreeing with you, but it also doesn't mean that Aaron Glenn can't be a good head coach. Good first-time head coaches have had success before. I think that this would have been the one time, BT, because of everything Scott just laid out, that we've been talking about this for weeks, if not months, where the Jets are at, Rodgers, the talent on the roster, the history with this organization, with the owner, that's why I would have skewed to go get a former Super Bowl winning head coach, or certainly somebody with experience, or skew offense. But it doesn't mean that Aaron Glenn can't be the right head coach if he is the right guy. Gates was the right philosophy or right theory, wrong guy. So maybe Aaron Glenn's not the right theory, but maybe he's the right guy.
I think one of the really important questions here, like not going after McCarthy and some others that certainly I would have had a conversation with McCarthy and others want you to want the Jets to hire him. Do they not do that because Woody doesn't want to acquiesce any power? And maybe more direct, a direct way to put it would be, are they hiring Aaron Glenn because they believe he's a superstar in the making, or probably hiring Aaron Glenn, or because Woody thinks that he's good and he's interesting, but he's also able to manipulate him? I don't know the answer to that. And if it is the latter, then it doesn't matter who the quarterback is or who the coordinators are, then Woody has not changed. Because I told everybody the only hope after this miserable season is that Woody looks in the mirror and he's honest with himself for the first time. Like the Parcells poem, The Man in the Mirror, you got to understand what's staring back at you. And if Woody's able to do that, well, then there's a chance. And if he can't do it, then there's no hope.
And the reason why I don't think that he is able to do it, twofold. Number one, where he came out and still denied that report from Rossini and basically didn't take any accountability or acknowledge that there was truth to it. That's number one. Number two, I know Pete Carroll wouldn't take a back seat for Woody Johnson. Didn't get a call. I know Mike McCarthy wouldn't take a back seat or acquiesce to Woody Johnson's demands. Again, relatively speaking, I know he's going to employ you, but you know what I mean. Didn't get a call. John Gruden, another one. Didn't get a call. Like three of the main, no doubt about it, guys who you know would not take any of his crap. He didn't even inquire about
coaching alphas. Coaching alphas.
Okay, there you go. Coaching alphas with experience, Super Bowl winning experience, didn't even get a call. And you could say Gruden didn't get a call from anybody. Carroll did. McCarthy did have interviews.
Can we leave the door slightly ajar that it was communicated to the Jets that those guys had no interest in the Jet job, hence the Jets didn't reach out and try to interview him?
Yeah, but I don't
believe... Can we at least leave that door slightly open?
But I don't believe that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I don't
believe it with McCarthy.
And I don't believe it with Carroll, so that's two out of three.
And I probably don't believe it with Gruden either because he just wants to coach anywhere.
But yeah, I mean, it's possible. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan, more your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019. BT itself back on the Fan on this Tuesday. So today the Hall of Fame, I guess, electees will be announced. BT, for Major League Baseball 2025 Baseball Hall of Fame ballot will get announced today at 6 o'clock. We'll react live to it on SNY at 6 o'clock on Baseball Night New York. Always look forward to these shows. Love the conversation. Love the debate. Hoff printed us out a ballot. We each had to select our... Now, you could fill up to 10, right?
Yep.
Select up to 10. No more than that. We did not talk to each other about this.
Nope.
How do you want to reveal it here? You want to just go down?
Let's start with this. How many did you actually check off?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
That's what I have.
Whoa!
I have 6 as well. All right, so let's start. Let's go. You see how it's from Abreu all the way to Zobrist there?
Yes.
Let's go by column. Your first one is?
Beltran.
I have Beltran as well.
Okay, you want to elaborate on Beltran, or you want to just go to the next one?
We can quickly elaborate after.
Let's see.
We might have all 6.
Yeah.
We might.
Well, the fact that we have the same number.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'd be curious because, okay.
We'll find out.
Next one?
Second column, or second one. Who's your next one?
Felix Hernandez.
You know what's funny? I that's the one that gave me the most pause. I do not have him.
Okay, so and I think really you probably thought have about one then that I don't, obviously. But
all right.
I would
right.
go Felix will expound on it afterward. Go ahead, second column.
My next one is Manny.
Me too.
I'm going with Manny. I'm going with A-Rod as well. Boom,
me
boom.
Too. And I would, they're not on the ballot, but I would go Bonds as
so
well.
Clemens, so would
yeah,
I.
Yeah, well, I hate Clemens, but I'd have to put him on there.
Okay.
Reluctantly, though, it would be my ballot, so I still don't know if I'd do Clemens. But either way, he's not on here. Manny and A-Rod. I think... Just before we finish this up, my thought was, if I have to think about it, I'm not checking the box.
That's why I didn't do Felix.
Well, only one. I just looked at two pitchers' numbers to confirm.
Yep.
But certainly with the offensive players, it hit me. This guy, Beltran's a Hall of Famer. Ramirez a Hall of Famer. A-Rod a Hall of Famer. That's it. If I had to think about it, they're not getting my vote. Okay, third column.
Third column, the first one I've got is CeCe.
I did not put CeCe on.
Are you nuts?
No, I had Felix on there.
So
I think Felix is better. I think Felix is better than Sabathia. And if your argument is going to be...
It's not going to be wins, I can promise you
okay,
that.
Okay, but if your argument is going to be postseason success, then I would have Andy Pettit on there. because Pettit, to me, more than any pitcher on this particular list, was epitomized postseason success.
All right, go to CeCe. I've got Felix. I've got King Felix up here. Go to CeCe's numbers real quick.
Okay, career ERA better for Felix, right?
Probably. CeCe, Felix is 3.42.
3.74 for CeCe. And by the way,
yep.
CeCe more consistent throughout. Felix, he's hung on too long. And look at his last several years there.
6.40, ridiculous. 5.55. So the numbers were a little bit skewed there.
Felix also led the league twice in ERA, which is probably my number one. Aside from Cy Young, when talking about Hall of Fame, I would go with leading in ERA.
Fair enough. I mean, those are things I generally look for as well. ERA plus, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
CeCe never did.
Okay, give me how many top 10 Cy Young finishes CeCe has.
All right, now hold
and
on.
As I count up for you here, I've got, for your guy, I've got one. He now, one, two, three, four, five. I've got 6-4 Felix.
Okay. CeCe won one, obviously. So did
Same
Felix.
Same with Felix.
Okay.
So that's comparable.
So one.
Just top tens.
Two.
Yeah.
Three, four,
gotta
five.
Got to be at least five. Okay. Five. So Felix has one more. All right. I mean, listen, I thought about Felix. I put it this way. If I'm watching tonight, and Felix gets in, and CeCe did not, that would be my first reaction, and a little dive into the stats, but my first reaction would be that would be unfair. If Sabathia got in and Felix did not, I would be a little bit more okay with that from a baseball perspective.
See, I would think that that's unfair because if you had to just
go... He's also an ace on a championship team.
Understood, but... I mean, that's
Felix
not Felix's
not.
Fault that he wasn't a Yankee. Felix was an ace.
But the Yankees hadn't won in a while. That's the first year they brought
understood.
Over CeCe Sabathia.
I'm not trying to knock CeCe.
I know you're not.
I'm just saying, like, my gut feel. And, like, if CeCe gets it, I'm not going to kick and scream because certainly, like there are pitchers. Mike Mussina, I don't think, is a true Hall of Famer.
I've always said that, too.
Okay, so he was a very, very good pitcher.
Yep.
I just never thought he was a Hall of Famer.
I agree with you.
Felix at his peak.
What about Don Sutton? He's before our time, but
yeah, I probably.
What about Bert Blylevin? See, those are the guys.
I know.
You know,
if I had one game, like King Felix at his peak was as good as any pitcher in the game.
I don't disagree with
period.
That.
So I value them at their peak, and it shouldn't be just King Felix versus Sabathia. But if I'm picking one. Sabathia, I hate to use even the word term compiler, but he was a great innings eater. He was a guy that would give you a lot of complete games. He was a guy that would win a lot of ball games.
Yep.
And a terrific pitcher and an ace. I just think if you take each of their peaks one night, I think King Felix is better.
I mean, when you do it that way, I mean, then, okay. But I mean, if you throw Doc Gooden out there and you say, and Doc doesn't have the numbers even close to get in, nor should he, and he won't, but, you know, if you said, all right, I'll just pick Doc or CeCe.
Right.
You'd say Doc
right.
as well.
So I would.
And so would I, by the way.
Correct. So I would rather have guys like that.
Yep.
Doc, Donnie.
Doc didn't do it enough, though. A couple more years and Doc, it's a no-brainer.
I know it, but I'm just saying, like, me personally.
I got you.
A guy that was, like, elite, next level, my Hall of Fame would be very limited.
Me too.
Because Doc, in theory, had the talent.
Uh-huh.
Same with Donnie. And I'd probably put Donnie in mine anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have that type of upper echelon Hall of Fame, quote, talent, as opposed to somebody who had longevity
I know
and
what
was
you're saying.
Really good.
I got you. Like a Don Sutton, who never was the best pitcher in baseball.
Right.
Real quick, though, before we get the other two, or one for me, I think two, or maybe three, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
How many sub three ERA years did CeCe have? I'm just curious.
Yeah, me too.
Sub
that's
three. So
no,
in terms of full ERA. Seasons, I'm looking up Felix. He's got one, two, three. Three for Felix, sub three. Remember, both these guys pitched in the steroid era as well. Got to remember that.
Seeing one for Sabathia.
That's it?
2.7.
Was that the Brewers year, too?
That was his walk year. That was the Brewers, and he was with Cleveland, got traded to Milwaukee.
So it was the Brewers year. Okay, got you.
Yes.
Wow. Nope, not even one for the Yanks? Are you sure?
I'm
not
just double-checking. You had one flat three.
What was it in 09?
Jeez, good God, he pitched a long time.
What was it in 09?
It was 337.
That high, huh?
318, 3.
I got
338.
Three on the button, like 3.00,
yes,
literally?
That's exactly
okay.
Right.
Okay. The final column, so I've got CeCe, you don't. We obviously have Ichiro.
One more before you just give those?
Yep.
Where do you view Pettit?
I don't view him as a Hall of Famer myself, but I like him a lot. I view him more than Mike Mussina.
He's like the Eli. I know Eli's likely going to get in, and we could have that conversation a later date. But like,
that's a good comparison.
Because Eli in the regular season is not getting in the Hall of Fame, but he won two. So like Pettit, his whole argument would be he's one of the best postseason pitchers I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. So then if you, like, how could you not put him in the Hall of Fame? I didn't vote for him here, and it's not because of the steroid thing, just because I don't look at him as a true Hall of Fame pitcher. But if I'm going to start extending it to Sabathia or Mussina, and I know that the Hall of Fame is, Andy Pettitte in the postseason, dude.
He was money. I mean, how many game twos did he take the ball against the Twins and some others? Where now he also had a couple games where he got rocked. Game one of the World Series, 96, gave up like 12 runs. Andrew Jones tagged him. The Diamondbacks game, he was the best game pitcher.
He was the best postseason pitcher,
but not perfect,
for the Yankee dynasty. All those years.
Yeah, El Duque may have been better, but it was shorter. Okay. But it was shorter.
Anyway, okay.
And by the way, here's the other thing, too. And we will have that Eli conversation at some point soon. I can make the case. I don't know if you would. Tell me if you would initially push back on this before, without going too deeply into it. I think that for the prime of their careers, that Andy Pettitte was closer to being one of the best pitchers in baseball than Eli was. Do you agree with that fundamentally?
I think Eli was, you know.
I got you. I'm just making sure we're on the same
page. I think he's a Hall of Famer, but yes, I agree.
Got you.
All right, so
we both have Sabathia. I have Sabathia. You don't. We both have Ichiro.
Yes.
And then do you have Billy?
Yes.
So do I.
So, wow, we're pretty...
So the difference is King Felix. We're both very reluctant to just start scratching 10 names off.
Right.
You have seven.
Six.
I've got
six. No, same thing. We have the same thing. I just don't have Sabathia.
Pardon me. We both have six. Correct. There you go.
I have Sabathia off. You have King Felix off.
That's the difference.
So nitpicky there. Now, would you have a problem with Ichiro being the only other unanimous or the second unanimous?
Along with Mo?
Yeah.
I was doing the trends last night. He's got a chance. I don't think he's going to get it. Would I have a problem with it? No. If Ichiro Suzuki came over at the age of 21, Now, this is a bit hyperbolic. He might have knocked on the door of 5,000 hits.
I know.
Not only that, he couldn't run like the wind, and he had a rocket from right field.
And the issue is not with the current voters. The issue is with the past voters.
I know.
Not making
it
Tom
usually
Seaver
is.
Or the other
Which
the
is
other
a joke. Tom Seaver, too. Yeah.
Well, whoever. All those other guys.
I agree.
Jeter, even in recent years. Like, come on. What are we doing here?
I don't know. I mean, there's just certain staples that transcend the game, and... Whether it's to have the ballot become public and you get on a radio show to do an interview and then further your brand. How some of these guys don't vote for certain people, it's really the dumbest thing in sports.
We'll talk to Tom Verducci coming up next. We'll do more baseball. We'll get back to the Aaron Glenn stuff. Don't worry, Jet fans. We'll hear from you at 888-808-1019. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the Fan right now. We are joined by Tom Verducci, of course, of the MLB Network. Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports. MLB Network will exclusively announce the Hall of Fame election results coming up tonight with Tom part of the coverage starting this afternoon. Tom, before we get into it, you have a vote. What was your ballot for this 2025 Baseball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I guess you could say I'm more of an old school guy. Well, I've been voting for more than 30 years, so that makes me old school, right? So I really tend not to fill out the 10 on my ballot, as some people do every year. There have been years I've done that when it's been really crowded, but I think I had four this year, and I've just had the holdover candidates. I've been voting for Billy Wagner for years. He's the guy I got my eye on today because, obviously, he was 5 votes short last year. And some of the early tracking leads you to believe that he will get over the 75% threshold. If he does, it's going to be really super close. So that's the one. That's the one borderline guy for me. I think Ichiro obviously is in. I think CeCe Sabathia gets in first pick as well. And I think Beltran probably waits another year. That's my guess.
Tom, can I ask you this? Just to step back from the ballot itself, and we want to throw some other stuff at you, obviously, here. You said you've been doing this for 30 years. Me and Sal have been watching baseball forever as well. When do you think, if you can find a point of demarcation where the standards changed a little bit? Because when I was a kid, like, it was as rarefied as you could possibly have in terms of a whole of accomplishment. And I think we all think it's been diluted over the years. Do you have a sense of when that happened?
I don't know exactly, but I do remember going back years when, you know, there were serious debates about whether guys like Phil Niekro or Don Sutton, 300-game winners, were Hall of Famers. It was not easy to get in. I do remember a lot of interest in Bert Blyleven getting in because he had great numbers, sort of like a Tommy John. Jim Cott was knocking on the door all those years. And then with a lot of sabermetric help and breaking down the numbers, he got above the threshold. That was the one case I remember where sort of the modern numbers really helped a guy who traditional numbers would tell you, man, maybe he's not a Hall of Famer. And, You know, I think also, guys, you have to look at the veterans committees and the flood of people who are going in on those committees. I know it's a different balloting from the writers, but I think it has affected the writers' ballot as well. I mean, I think the standards have changed a little bit. I think you're absolutely right. I don't have a problem with it. It's just the way things evolve. But it is, I don't want to say easier, but it used to be a lot harder to get into the Hall of Fame. We're seeing now 2, 3, 4, even a year now, whereas it used to be maybe you had one, a couple of years with some shutouts.
Yeah, the only people that don't get in now are the guys who use PEDs. I mean, everybody else seemingly gets in. Our difference, Tom, BT and I filled out our fake votes before you came on, and we did. The only difference that we have, we both had Manny and A-Rod on, but we understand why you wouldn't. And then BT and I disagreed on, I did not have Sabathia, but I had King Felix. You had Sabathia, but not King Felix. Give me your thought process to why no Felix Hernandez.
Yeah, he may be a guy that's going to take some time to get in. I just think he was pretty much done at 29-30. You can make a case there, though. For 11 years, he was one of the best pitchers in the game. I just think when you look at his total numbers, he's below some guys who've had really high peaks without the longevity, guys like Johan Santana, Brett Saberhagen, maybe Tim Lincecum, a lot of pitchers who are great for a while. I just didn't see the back half of his career being that good. Of course, he threw a ton of innings at an early age, and I'm sure that caught up to him. I mean, he was in the big league rotation at 19 and 20. For CC, it was kind of easy for me. I tend to think the easier you can make a case for somebody, the more he's a Hall of Famer. And I look at this. He's one of three left-handers in history with 250 wins and 3,000 strikeouts. The others are Steve Carlton and Randy Johnson. So, you know, he's kind of a throwback in terms of the way he took the ball year after year. Again, he's a guy back half of his career, not that great, but he kept taking the ball. So he started compiling these strikeout numbers and win totals that I think get him over the hump in terms of the Hall of Fame.
Well, it's funny because you and I are on the same page in terms of both going for CeCe and not going for King Felix. But you said something that, you know, raised my eyebrows. You said basically, and I know he came up young, 19 or so, and basically after 11 years, he kind of flamed out. But let's bring that to Mattingly, who, imagine if Don Mattingly had, I know it's a different position player versus a pitcher, but if Mattingly had 11 years, Don Mattingly would have been in the Hall of Fame 15 years ago. So it's almost like you're minimizing 11 years. 11 years is pretty good.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I think, you know, my general point is, you know, 10 years, you should have a 10-year peak. You know, I know a lot of people will look at 4, 5, 6 years. I tend to be a little longer than that. And
Yeah, listen,
I think he's a borderline guy. He's one of those guys that might grow on me as the years go by. I mean, let's face it. We look at starting pitching in today's game, and the guys who pitch 200 innings, I mean, they look like Walter Johnson and Christy Mathewson now because nobody's doing it. So the more years go by, the better I think King Felix looks. So, I'd have to look at and compare it to some of the other guys that I mentioned who are not in the Hall of Fame, who had peaks but not a lot of proficiency over the years. Like a Saberhagen, like a Santana, there's a lot of those guys. And I thought he was really close, just a little bit short. I haven't ruled him out in terms of future ballots.
Okay.
BT, it's Al on the Fan. We're talking with Tom Verducci of MLB Network. They're going to have the exclusive announcement tonight, the Hall of Fame election results. Last one for me, Tom, on the Hall of Fame specifically, then we'll get into some free agent stuff. How much do you value postseason success? We kicked around the idea of Andy Pettitte, who for my money was one of the best postseason pitchers I've ever seen on the Yankee dynasty in the 90s. Where do you value postseason when voting for the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, to me, it's like being back in middle school where you do an assignment and you get extra credit for it. You know, if it's not that great, it's not like your markets gets knocked down. But if you do a good job with extra credit, yes, it adds to your case. So that's the way I look at postseason. Like looking at Billy Wagner, I know people look at his 10 whatever it is ERA in the postseason. It's only like 11 2/3 innings. It's a very small sample size. I don't hold that against him. But when I see someone like Carlos Beltran and the numbers that he puts up, his slash line in the postseason is one of the best of all time. Yeah, that can help you get over the edge. There's no doubt about that. I mean, even CeCe, you know, he had his moments in the postseason, that great series against the Angels in 09. But in general, his ERA is a lot higher in the postseason than it is in the regular season. So I don't think he gets extra credit necessarily for the postseason.
Yeah.
But some guys do. So that's the way I look at it. I won't hold it against you if it's a really small sample. I mean, Ted Williams had 200 in the postseason. Do I hold that against them? Of course not.
No.
But if you do well, I think it does definitely. Listen, the guys who change history, you're talking about the David Ortiz of the world, right? The guys who change history with postseason play, that means something when it comes to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, even Willie Mays' OPS is under 700. There's a lot of examples of guys who just didn't quite, wasn't commensurate with what they did over the course of their career, the regular season to the postseason. So, Tom, before we get some remaining free agent names, Pete, I want to ask you this. 30 years you've been doing this. Do you have a favorite Hall of Fame speech? Were you there when Rizzuto spoke?
I was not there for Rizzuto. You know, maybe because it's fresh in my mind because of his untimely death. But Ricky Henderson, I thought, was great. I mean, he was one of my all-time favorite players. I loved covering him. He was just a real gentleman, a great guy to be around. Loved the game of baseball. My favorite story out of Ricky, I remember I went to write a story on him when he was playing for the Newark Bears. He must have been 43 or 44 years old playing independent baseball. And he was living at, he was taking a hotel room in New York and commuting to Newark. He was getting paid $3,000 a month by the Newark Bears, and he was paying $4,000 in rent in New York. So he was literally paying to play independent baseball at the age of 43. How great is that?
That's awesome.
So that's a personal favorite of mine.
That's a good one, man. All right, so listen, he's got a long way to go. Maybe he gets to 500 home runs, and maybe someday we're talking about Pete in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if we're talking about Pete back in Queens, though. I mean, obviously, it seems like he's gone. Can that change? Can the Mets pivot? Can they find a little common ground, or is it over?
I think the door is still open. I think a lot of this is up to Steve Cohen. And if the market, and it looks like it's not developing at all for him in terms of years and length, if it continues to be this dry, I think there's a point where, you know, the Mets go back to Pete and say, hey, we'll take you back on a short-term deal, 3-4 year deal, maybe an opt-out after 1 or 2 years. You can go out and hit the market again if you want. But I could see the emotional investment. And even on, you know, on paper, I mean, why wouldn't you want Pete Alonso in your lineup, right? I mean, he's a guaranteed 35, 40 home run guy every year. You just can't find those guys anywhere. But I thought going in, guys, that his market was just not going to be as good as he thought. Just the way the game is today, front offices just don't value those one-dimensional sluggers who play the corner position. And I think, you know, David Stearns is a guy who wants a team like he had in Milwaukee, where he's got a lot of young people with athleticism, get play multiple positions, a lot of flexibility. That's not Pete Alonso, right? But I think in terms of the owner and what Pete means to this team and having, you know, a right-handed bat with Soto, perfect, right? If you get him back on a 2-3-4 year deal, I think that's possible because I don't think his market is that great. Here's the example I use, guys, in terms of Pete Alonso. Going back to 93, and that sounds like ages ago, right? Remember Cecil Fielder? He had the Tigers over a barrel. He had a trade request in, and so they've signed him to an extension. They made him the second highest paid player in baseball behind only Barry Bonds. He got paid on home runs and RBIs. His numbers are almost identical to Pete Alonso. Nobody does that anymore. So his comps now, Pete Alonso, is Fielder, it's Ryan Howard, it's Mo Vaughn. It's these corner infielders who you don't want to buy their decline in their 30s. And that's why he's not seeing that 6-7 year deal.
But there's not one other team. I mean, the Mets offered him the 3 years, $68 or $70 million, which I thought was fair market value, if not over that, Tom. I need to see who else is involved. Where are the other teams that are even offering Pete anything? And if they do, is it really going to be better than 3 for $68 or $70 million at this point?
I don't think there's a team that would want him at this point more than the New York Mets. I mean, I thought he'd be a great fit in Seattle. I know it's a terrible park to hit in. Even Pete, his numbers would go down there, but they don't look like they're spending that kind of money. You know, the Blue Jays would send Tom there. That's a guy who hit 44 home runs. When you look at the deferred money, that's only about a $17 million per year AAV for a 44 home run guy. So, you know, whether it's Toronto's still involved there, I don't know. Whether it's Cincinnati, I do think the Mets are still the best fit. And I'm Pete, man. I would come back 3 times 25 with an opt-out after one. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little pride thing, which is tough to calculate, and a little ego thing. I get it. I mean, he's a human being. So maybe that's what's dissuading him from doing that, although maybe he changes his mind. But I want to explore the Toronto angle a little bit more, because me and Sal were doing this the other day, Tom, where, all right, they've been trying to give money away for years. They try to get Sasaki, try to get Ohtani. We know what's that. You know better than anybody. So now they got Santander, who I don't love anyway. He's not a good fielder, not a lot of juice on the bases, but he can hit, and he's a switch hitter. But do you think now it's more likely that they try to entice Pete, even if it's a 1 year with a high AAV, and they roll it back and don't try to trade Vladdy, and say, hey, Vlad, look, we brought in this guy, Santander. We got Pete, a little pop. You think that they try to go for the gusto, or do you think that they're 100% out on Pete at this point?
I wouldn't say 100% out. I mean, listen, they've been trying to give away their money, and people just aren't taking it, right?
Yeah.
So whether it's Pete or whether it's Bregman, I still think they have another move left in them. They've got the money to spend. This team put a lot of money into refurbishing that ballpark.
It looks good, by the way, Tom. It looks good.
Yeah, no, and Vlad has told them he wants a deal, an extension, or stop talking before spring training. Now, whether he holds to that, I don't know, but you have to have contingencies and think, well, maybe he's not signing extension here. If it's not done by now, when is it going to get done? So, I wouldn't rule Toronto out. They've been very aggressive. The general manager there, I think he knows he's got to produce a winner, at least close to a postseason team this year. It's a huge market with a great baseball history there. I don't know what their plan is because I have not seen the apparent plan from the Toronto Blue Jays for the last couple of years. And I think they're in scramble mode right now, so I rule nothing out with Toronto.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate your time. Enjoy the MLB Hall of Fame tonight.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Here you go. Good job. Tom Verducci, MLB Network, Sports Illustrated, Fox Sports.